I want to take a moment. Hopefully it won't cause too much disturbance or disruption, but everyone who's between the age of 12 and 30, I would like you to be in these front two rows. I'm going to see how the translation works because we need everyone above 12 and 30 to get out of the front two rows. I was debating on what age I should start with, and Christ, of course, we know that he debated in the temple by the time he was 12, or at the time he was 12. I don't ask too many questions where I want answers during the sermon, but I am today, just a little bit. And this is not a trick question. I just want you to give me some answers from these first two rows on this side of the room. What are things in life that you consider to be awesome? Now, it's not a trick question. For example, I think that Victor's tie could be considered awesome. Do you want to stand up there, Mr. Granados? It's an awesome bow tie. But what would you say? What do you consider in this life to be awesome? Edwin? No, you can just say it. Technology. Like what you have in your lap right there. Yeah, technology is awesome. It's incredible. Inexpensive. Yes, Kyle? Having money to buy technology. Or do stuff, yes. Jessica?
Family.
I was hoping my kids would say that. What else? Now, I emphasize that the feast, that word is used and misused all the time. How many of you and your friends use the word? All right, if you use the word awesome, raise your hand. These first two rows right here. Okay, what do you consider to be awesome? Oh, family. Family and friends, good. John?
Freedom to travel.
That is an awesome freedom. Any others? Yeah. Car is pretty awesome. I like my car. I like having a car. It's good. So there's a lot of things that we could apply to that word, and I'll come back to that in just a few moments. But we are going to emphasize today, with the time that we have left here, some principles that you've heard before for young people in the church. Today, being the blessing of the children, I am going to focus this on the younger people, but it's not a free ride for anybody. It's not nap time if you're below 12 or over 30. You're under 30, right? Okay. Just checking. But we're going to emphasize some principles that I want to make sure that sometime in the future when we're asked to relocate and serve in other congregations, that you all can know and know that you know that if I didn't teach you anything else, these are some principles that I have taught you and that you will know. And the rest of the congregation will be witnesses that you have been taught and that you know these things, that these things you have been given. So first of all, let's look at Psalm 25. And some of these are going to be a review of things that we've covered, but there are times when I get principles, spiritual principles in my mind, and I meditate on them and study about them, that it's hard to move away from them. And I don't know if it's because I'm hard-headed or I just believe that review is a wonderful teacher. But first and foremost, and I'm not claiming to be the only minister or pastor who has taught you these things, but I know that they've been taught and emphasized and that these are things that you can know and understand. Psalm 25, verse 4. Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your path. Now, this is a Psalm of David. It says it's a plea for deliverance and forgiveness. But David's way of life, we know he made his mistakes, but overall, being a man after God's own heart, his way of life was to pray and to ask God to show him his ways, to show David God's way of life. He says, show me your ways, O Lord, teach me your path. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. So we know without a doubt, you all know without a doubt, that God has a way of life. And even in the one accord today, we heard from the man who had the message, feast message for the rest of us, that the God of this world is Satan. And Satan's ways, the ways of this world, are not God's ways. God has a certain way of life and a path. So when David says, show me your ways, he's saying, teach me, or to make known. And it can mean specifically your way. Some of you might remember your parents at some point in time using maps. Not too many people still use maps. It's kind of like cassette tapes. There's a certain age now that doesn't know what cassette tapes are. My first stereo in my bedroom was an 8-track player. Now, I was pretty young when I got it. I want to make that point. But it was an 8-track player before there were even cassettes. And some of you might remember the... where's Mr. Mitchell? There he is. Those old record players with the big thing coming off of them that you had to put your ear close to hear. But not that Mr. Mitchell would remember that, but some people might. The technology changes, and of course, now we use GPSs and our phones and various things to get to one point to another. But this word where it says, show me your ways, it could mean that there's a specific path, and it's kind of like, give me the map or directions. But it also can be translated, show, not just show me your ways, but show me your customs or your business, so to speak. How do you do business? How do you live? How do you work? How do you play? So David was asking to know God and to know God's way of doing things. We emphasize that there are many paths in life, but there's only two ways of life. So that's something that you have heard many times. And it's something that you need to know and know that you know. No matter what anybody tells you, the Bible tells you there's only two ways of life. A way to life, God's way, and a way to death, which is Satan's way or man's way, human nature inspired by Satan. Within that broad way, that's what we call it, right? The broad way. You don't like sitting there, do you? Within that broad way, there's many choices that you can make, and there's many paths within that broad way of good and evil. So when we say that there's many paths, when you look around this congregation, you see people from many different backgrounds, many countries. We come from various countries, various walks of life. There's many paths that we've taken to get to where we are now. But in life, there's only two ways of life, no matter within that ways of life, the path that you choose. There's only the path, the broad way, what is it called? The way of man, the way of good and evil, the way that leads to death. Oh, you do like that seat. She knows the answers, too. That's a good seat for you. Or there's the narrow way, which is the way of life. Thank you. And David is saying here, show me your ways. Make your ways of doing things clear to me. So you have been given direction to God's way of life, to the path of life. Now you choose whether or not to be on that path. Nobody can make you. Do we all want our children to be on that path, the way of life? I think if we were to ask the parents here, I think all the parents would say, of course. And the grandparents, we want our grandchildren to be on that path. There's only two ways, and you have to choose which way. God's path, which is holy, righteous, and perfect, or the opposite. And the opposite way, human beings on that path, they are making many choices to try to live their life, to try to solve their problems individually and collectively. So we need to understand this. Human beings are constantly striving to solve human problems, individually or collectively, with human nature inspired by Satan. And often it leads to what? Failure. Yeah, it leads to failure. So what methods do they use? That's a wide open question. Technology. That is true. Okay. Let's think about this. I've used this example before. Occupy, the Occupy movement. What technique do they use to try to solve issues or problems? What'd you say?
Protest.
Yeah. Certain amount of rebellion, a certain amount of violence, a certain amount of disruption. Kind of like trying to get you guys to the front row. All these things. Human beings use these things. What do we see in society today? Terrorism. All right, I'll just give you the answers. Some of the things that we see. Terrorism. They're trying to solve certain issues or certain problems through terror by using this terrorism. We see war. We see these various things that are taking place. That's the opposite of God's way of life. So I want to make this point and make sure that we're clear. Too many issues and problems today are trying to be resolved through rebellion or force or disruption. God's way of life that we strive with God's inspiration to teach young people is the opposite of rebellion. It's yielding. It's gentleness. It's being submissive in the proper way, in the right way, to authority. It's recognizing authority. That is God's way of life. And God's way is always holy, righteous, and perfect. Now, one of the things that I have tried to emphasize to young people, and I know I'm not the only one, is that God's way is fair. Now, if any of you can tell me where we find in the Bible that God's way is fair, you can move to the back row. And we won't even ask you any more questions. Edwin? Nope. What's it say in Job? You might be right. I'll Yeah, so we learned the principle of it. Where does it actually say God's way is fair? All right, you stay in the front row. That's very good, though. Thank you for adding that. We're going to look in Ezekiel. And what it says is, you say God's ways are not fair, or you say my ways, human ways are fair, something of that nature. But I want to look at this. You're going to remember, I think, you're going to remember this proverb, because I've used it before, where it says, what is this proverb? And don't use it anymore in Ezekiel 18. When it says, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Do you remember that? And we explained that if I were to stand up here and suck on a lemon, if this were a true proverb, if I were to stand up here and suck on a lemon, then Vivian would go, because it would be sour to her. So that's what it's referring to when it talks about that. So he says, you're not going to use that proverb anymore. Verse 3, it says, as I live, says the Lord God, you shall no longer use this proverb in Israel. Verse 4 says, behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the Father as well as the soul of the Son is mine. And the soul who sins shall die. So sin leads to death. Without mercy, without the forgiveness of the blood of Christ, sin always leads to death. So we see that there as well as in other places. Come down to verse 19. Yet you say, why should the Son not bear the guilt of the Father because the Son has done what is lawful and right? So he's answering it. Why should the Son not bear the guilt of the Father? Because the Son has done what is lawful and right and has kept all my statutes and done them. He shall surely live. So again, verse 20. The soul who sins shall die. The Son shall not bear the guilt of the Father, nor the Father bear the guilt of the Son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. So we see that God says, if you do right, you'll be rewarded for doing right. Doesn't matter how your family lived, your father, your grandfather. If any of you saw the movie where the one guy was trying to impress that lady
And so he took her to Rikers Island, and he had the guard in Rikers Island open the book to her great-grandfather who came through there. The port. Anybody else see this movie? Yeah, it wasn't. I don't like to admit what movies I watch, but you're right. That's the movie. And so he opens the book there, and it's the butcher of whatever's name, and then come to find out her great-grandfather was a mass murderer. And that's why he was known as the butcher of whatever place. But she didn't have to bear his guilt. That's the point I'm making by bringing up that. So that's what these verses are saying. So the point I want to make to young people, no matter the examples that you've seen, whether it's from parents or grandparents or whoever it might be, hopefully you've seen many good examples of God's way of life. But no matter the bad example, if you do what's right, you will be blessed. You will have the blessings of God. Verse 25. This is what I was referring to. The young Mr. Jackson up front had a very good principle from Job. But in verse 25 it says, "Yet you say, the way of the Lord is not fair. Hear now, O house of Israel, is it not my way which is fair, and your ways which are not fair?" Verse 29, "Yet the house of Israel says, the way of the Lord is not fair. O house of Israel, is it not my ways which are fair, and your ways which are not fair?" So again, it's important to always remember God's way of life is fair to everyone, to young people and to Mr. Mitchell, to all of us, to you and to me. God's way of life is always fair. Fair. It's always right. It's always good. It's the same for all of us. So, our society has a tendency to say, it's not fair. Occasionally I find myself saying that. When our kids were growing up, we tried to teach them not to say that. Because it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. But we have a society in which people like to say, it's not fair. Let's try to make it fair. Well, if you want fairness, God's way of life is always fair. So David says, teach me your ways, show me your ways. To teach, when he says, teach me or show me your ways, he's talking about specifically to be teachable. It means, in a way, to be tame enough to be teachable. So young people, you eventually have to come to a point in your life that you tame your heart. In other words, you control yourself so that you're not pursuing things outside the realm of what you know is right and what you know is good. So it says to teach me, to be teachable. When I was in the first grade, the kid that lives straight across the street from me, his name was Tony. We were in the same class. We've been friends our whole life. I lived in my house my whole life. He lived in his house his whole life. So by 6 years old, we were pretty close. And when we came into the first grade classroom, it was Mrs. Reed's class. And we sat right next to each other in the back row. If we were facing the teacher, it was the back row on the right side. But we were next to each other. And after one day of school, she made us separate. And she said, "I know I won't teach you anything if you stay together." I remember her saying that. So she made us separate. And because we wouldn't tame ourselves to control ourselves being that close together in the classroom. So the point that David is saying is, help me to control myself, to be teachable. And I believe Mr. Jackson and I both, in our prayers for the little children, ask for a teachable spirit or heart. That is one of the greatest things you can pray for. It's a teachable spirit. And for parents and grandparents, pray for your children and your grandchildren to have a teachable spirit. So you know that God has a way of life. You have been taught God's way of life. How old were you when you came into the church? You were born in the church. You have been taught God's way of life. Jonathan? Same. Julio? Vivian? Brianna? Tasha? John? Edwin? I have forgotten your name. Emmanuel? Thank you. All right, so now how old are you? 12? Okay, good. Kyle? You don't remember? You're just so old, it's way in the past. Victor? Jessica? Yeah. So, in the book of Timothy, I forgot to ask him. In the book of Timothy, it says that you have known the Scriptures from your youth. It means from an infant or from the cradle. So you know that God has a way of life. You know it. So the question becomes, what do you do with it? You don't have to answer that question. That's rhetorical. What do you do with it? When you leave church, I know from my kids and having spiritual conversations with them at young ages, and it's probably younger than 12, kids can have spiritual conversations and they can comprehend spiritual principles. They can have spiritual understanding. So what do you do with it? When you leave services on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, when you're not at church, what do you do with what you have been taught? So 12 years old, Emmanuel, it's not too young to ask that question because you make decisions in your mind for yourself. So sometimes you think of things that you want to do or say, and hopefully they're good things. You are making choices. All of us do at any age. Continually we make choices. So when we choose God's way of life, we have to be yielding to it. It requires a gentle spirit. Our society does not admire gentle spirits. Our society will stomp on or walk over or take advantage of a gentle spirit. And yet, we are to have gentle, teachable, yielding, submitting spirits. That's what is important to God. The type of attitude that will yield to authority. That's what's important to God. Your parents have to do it. If you have grandparents in the church, they have to do it. We all have to yield to God. That's part of our responsibility. It's part of maturing as Christians. And the earlier we learn that, the better off we are. And we've also talked quite a bit about not being stiff-necked. Because that's the opposite of yielding. So if you have ever pulled on a donkey, I haven't, but I've seen them in Africa. I've seen little boys behind donkeys whipping them as for all they're worth, trying to get that donkey to go where they want it to. And one's pulling on the front, one's whipping it on the back with a stick, and trying to get it to go where they want it to. But that donkey is unyielding. The donkey does what it wants to do. So we are encouraged not to be stiff-necked. And it's something that's very important. Because the longer we're stiff-necked, the harder it becomes for God to work with us. So I hope that I'm going to just do a quick review. The points that I'm making that you know and that you know that you know. God has a way of life. You have been given God's way of life. You have to choose God's way of life. No matter what you've seen in the church or in your families, as the case may be, you are responsible for obeying God. Now, hopefully you've seen good examples and you've seen unity. You've seen men and women who love God and love God's way of life. And hopefully, you haven't seen hypocrisy. If you have, we know that hypocrisy is something that's very ugly. Everybody understand hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is mean being insincere. And sometimes in God's church, there are people who are insincere. But it is never an excuse for you not to do what you know to do. At camp, the way it was worded, or for those of you who were in Bedford when we had the young people there, Don't resist what God is doing with you and through you. Don't resist it. Don't be stiff-necked. In other words, don't try to work out your life in human ways, because it will never work. It leads to failure. That's where it will always lead. And we have example after example of people in the Bible who tried to work out things their own way. So when the nation was led out of Israel, as a way of review, Moses was up on the Mount Sinai to get the Ten Commandments, and what did the people do? Yeah, made a false idol. So that quickly they rejected God. And they decided that they were going to lead their own lives and work out things their own way. So Aaron made them a golden calf, and they began to worship it. They decided that they didn't want prophets to lead the nation of Israel anymore. So what did they do? They asked for a king to lead the people, because they wanted to solve human problems in a human way. Other nations around them had kings. They wanted a king. They wanted a physical human being that they could look to. The point I'm making is, don't try to live your life not utilizing God's way of life that has been shown to you. Trying to use human solutions for human problems. Let's look at Hebrews chapter 3. The Bible is full of examples of individuals and nations striving to use human reasoning to solve human problems. Hebrews chapter 3. Verse 7 says, therefore, as the Holy Spirit says, today if you will hear His voice, verse 8, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion and the day of trial in the wilderness, where your fathers tested me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Then he goes on to talk about how angry he was with them. So it says in verse 8, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. So remember to have a hardened heart. How would you describe that? What words would you use? If somebody has a hardened heart, what would we say? They are unkind? Yeah, I think that could apply. What else? Arrogant? Not willing to learn? Wasteful? Boastful? Okay. How about stubborn? Did Victor say stubborn? Stubborn. Headstrong. Willful. Now, these words describe anybody with a hardened heart. It means specifically to cause to be stubborn, to cause to be obstinate, especially with regard to the truth. So it means specifically to cause the hearts to be obstinate or stubborn, headstrong, and willful. So what this is referring to specifically, according to Barnes' notes of the Bible, is a heart that is insensible to the divine voice and admonition. A hard heart is that where the conscience is seared and insensible. It means that where the truth makes no impression. You hear it, it might sound good, but when you're not at church or you're not with the minister, it's what happens when you date the minister's daughter. Sometimes you have to be at the minister. That means that when you're on your own, how are you responding to the truth? When there is no one else around. We are conditioned by society, for example, not to appeal to people when they're doing something that is wrong. In other words, if you see people, your peers, and I'm referring specifically to people in the church, doing something wrong or that they shouldn't be, talking in ways they shouldn't be, whatever it might be, we're conditioned not to do something about it, not to say anything. That's the way society is. You can't tell anybody they're wrong. So this is talking about if you were to appeal to your friends, if you get together, hopefully your friends like you, if not love you. So you get together because one of them's doing something they shouldn't be doing or that's harming them, and you tell them something. Have you ever done this with someone and they just will not listen to you? That's what this is referring to. When God appeals to you, He appeals to you because you are His children. So you're not too young. Victor, how old are you? 16. You're not too young to yield to the truth. Emmanuel, at 12. John, how old are you? You just barely made it there, is what I'm thinking. But you can yield to the truth. We know you can. And it's not, we know some of you are already baptized that are healed. You are yielding. But what, the point I want to make is, do what you know is right. Nobody can make you. You have the truth. Live it. Choose life. Choose to live God's way of life. Don't harden your hearts. So when you go out from today, or next Sabbath, or the next, or after next feast, or whenever it is, live the truth. Don't resist it. The more you resist doing what you know is right, the harder your heart will become. And so we see that that's what the Israelites did. God said in the wilderness, that they hardened their hearts in the wilderness. And we can look at that as society. And when He's talking about prove me, where it says that they proved Him, I think it's in verse 9 of Hebrews, I shut my Bible. But it means that it's as if they were doing an experiment to see how much His patience would last. Well, I know young people, I grew up in the church as well, many of us have, and many of us had to do certain things on our own just to find out whether or not it's actually true. But you don't have to. The truth is the truth. And it's always going to be the truth. And it's always going to be right and just and good and fair. So the point is, apply it. Make the decision and the choices to apply the truth in your life. Because the more you resist it, the harder your heart can become. So you have the truth. We desire you to choose to live it. When we were in Bedford, for the few of you that were there, do you remember the example of Plato? Victor, you remember that? All right. So, how many of you in these first two rows ever played with Plato? John, you still have some? So, how many of you left Plato outside for a couple of days or under the couch or something like that? How many of you tasted it? Why is it kids put Play-Doh in their mouth? I did too. It's kind of salty. I remember that. But if you leave it out for a couple of days, what does it become? It becomes very hard. So if you have Play-Doh and it's soft, you can shape it and mold it and you can do things with it. Once it becomes hard, forget it. I remember trying to soak it in water and different things and trying to get it elastic again, and made some messes with it. But it doesn't get that way again. It's never pliable again. So while your heart, before your heart is hardened, you have the truth. Make choices to live the truth. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 28. Anyone on this side of the room ever tasted Play-Doh? Proverbs chapter 28, verse 14. Happy is the man who is always reverent, but he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. So reverence, it means when it says, happy is the man who is always reverent, it's talking specifically, that's a spiritual word that means to recognize the glory of God, the power of God. If you revere God, you recognize His power, His glory, His might, and you have the proper fear of God. We recognize or should know that the proper fear of God leads to obedience. And it says happiness. So, those of you in the front two rows, how many of you hope to grow up, get through college, get a job? I know some of you are grown up. Julio, do you hope to grow up, get through school, get married, and be happy? And how many of you hope to grow up, get through college or your education, whatever it might be, and get married and be unhappy? Raise your hand. Who was that in the back row that raised their hand? Nobody plans to be unhappy. We desire happiness. Being unhappy is unnatural. So the proper fear of God, it leads to happiness. But if we ignore the truth, eventually our heart becomes hardened to it. And when it talks about falling into calamity, it's talking about disaster or distress or hardship. It's talking about a hard life. So happy is he who fears God, who reveres God and recognizes the truth and strives to live it. That's what this is referring to. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 50. Now this is a verse I've covered a couple of times with young people recently, but it's a beautiful verse. It's a prophecy about Jesus Christ. And again, when we are asked to move somewhere else, if you say, this is all Mr. Waddle taught me, this is all I ever learned while he was here, I would be very happy with that. Hopefully there's something else that you could think of if you really thought hard. But Isaiah chapter 50, verse 4. The Lord God has given me the tongue of the learned that I should know how to speak. A word in season to him who is weary. He awakens me by morning by morning. He awakens my ear to hear as the learned. The Lord God has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious, nor did I turn away. And so we see that this term awakened, where it says that the He awakens me morning by morning. We know that we wake up in the morning, but it's not talking about that. It's talking about being in a state that is ready for action. So it doesn't just mean to wake up. It means to be alert and ready in a state for action. For doing is what it's referring to. So we are told in the book of James to be doers of the Word of God and not hearers only. So that applies to every one of us, and it doesn't matter what age we are. We are making choices. We're making decisions. So awaken means to be awakened and ready for action, ready to do things. And what he's referring to is right things. So we are given life every day, and we have the choice to do right things. So awaken my ear. It means to open the ear so that your ear is aware of instruction. If your ear is awakened, have you ever, let me put it this way, have you ever had a foot fall asleep or a hand and you got to shake it to get the tingles out of it and everything, get the blood flowing back through? Has your ear ever done that? Yes? Did you shake your head? Yes. My ears have never done that. So that's not what it's referring to. That's the point I want to make. If your ear is awakened, it's saying that your ear is open to teaching, to instruction, to hear as the learned. The learned are disciples or students. And the idea behind this Hebrew word, to hear as the learned, means as someone who wants to learn, who desires to learn, They put themselves in positions to learn. They're attentive to what they're hearing as far as the truth. They listen and they put it into practice. So God's church, we have these leadership conferences coming up. But whether you're there or not, God's church needs young people who are willing to obey God. God's church needs young people who won't just hear the truth, but will live it, will put it into practice, who are faithful men and women, who will yield to it, and who will teach it to their children and to their grandchildren. Because it's a wonderful gift that God has given us. But nobody can make you treasure it. Nobody can make you value it. You have to make that connection with God yourself. Each and every one of you, you have to do it yourself. And you have to be determined, not just to know it, but to do it. And the way I like to phrase this, it is your heritage. It is your identity. It's who you are. We talk about being the family of God. For any of us, whether you're 12 to 30 or on this side, any of us, me behind the podium, we have to choose to obey God to be in His kingdom. We have to choose to be like God to be His family. So none of you can ride your parents' coattails. Do you understand what that means? Just because your parents obey God, you're going to reap certain blessings because God will bless them. But it doesn't get you into the kingdom. None of you will be stopped from being in the kingdom because of your parents or grandparents. God's way is fair and right and holy and just for you and for me, for every one of us. But it's your choice to submit to God's way of life. And it's your choice to decide what you are going to do with the wonderful gift of the truth that you have been given.